Welcome to the Total Wealth Academy radio show, where wealth includes much more than just money. It includes family, fitness, romance, and all the other parts of a balanced life. Listen and learn how 70% of the millionaires in America made their money using real estate. Now your host, real estate investor and consultant, Steve Davis.
Good afternoon, everybody, and happy Wednesday. This is Trevor Davis, wealth coach up here at Total Wealth Academy. And I want to follow up from last week, and my mom actually sent me another article regarding the stocks that we discussed. And if you tuned in last week, we learned all about the stocks, but I want to start off with this because it was just so interesting for her to send this to me first thing in the morning. And it says, the Walton family lost nearly $19 billion on Tuesday after Walmart's biggest stock slide ever. And as you all know that tuned in last week, we have the ups and downs of the market. But that's one example that we look at with the risk and the downturns that comes with the market, and that is par for the course when it comes to being in stocks and being in a business like that. And that's, again, that's not just going to go away forever. It's going to come back. But that's just another example of some of those really high risks that happen in the stock market. So a little bit of a different start today, because I've always started with the Einstein quote, which is the measure of intelligence is the ability to change. There's going to be something right now that's probably bothering you in some way, shape, or form. It could be something relatively big. It could be something relatively small. But let's focus on something that's a habit that you've been doing recently, or you've been doing for a very long time, or maybe even something you've been doing your whole life. And maybe it's something that you were taught by your parents to do ever since you were a little kid. The habits that we're committing ourselves to are the hardest thing to change. We are, however you want to interpret this word, programmed to have a set of habits to which we follow. We're going to be doing a certain collection of behaviors on any given day. Sometimes it's the same exact collection of behaviors day in and day out for our entire lives, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it becomes an issue when we're unhappy with the results that come from those actions. We're not content with the results that come from those habits. So we have to be able to identify first what those habits are, and two, how we can change them. And really three, I would just say the easiest thing is to identify a habit that's going to be different than that and do it instead. And it's, of course, easier said than done, because we're hard programmed to stick with these habits. And then when we try to change them, that same programming is telling us to resist that change, because we're comfortable with what we've been doing so far. We're comfortable so much because we know it doesn't get us killed at the very least. So our survival brain is also involved, and our survival brain is going to hijack the change from the get-go, because it's not sure if this activity is dangerous or not, if this new habit is going to be dangerous or not, if it's going to lead us to maybe more pain or get us hurt or even killed. As crazy as that sounds, that's literally what our survival brain is all about, literal survival. So it's extremely skeptical of even the smallest habit change, and it's always going to be fighting very, very aggressively to keep us doing the same things over and over again, just because it's got the track record proof that whatever we're doing, as bad as it may be, is at least not getting us killed. So there's a lot of things that are pushing us to stick with the things that we're doing. Now, what I want to approach topic-wise today is, to me, it's the hardest thing to approach. To me, this is the most challenging part of life. This is the most worthwhile and rewarding part of life. And that reward comes with some of the highest risks. It comes with some of the highest risk for personal suffering and unhappiness. And it's something that all of us are involved with in different ways and to different degrees. And I'm, of course, talking about human relationships. What are the relationships that you're in now? What are your relationships doing? And are they getting better on a day-to-day basis? Are they stagnating? Are we just sticking with the same habits when it comes to those relationships and not really progressing them in a constructive way that takes advantage of our human ingenuity for improvement? Or are they getting worse? Are we neglecting our relationships? We have many, many relationships as humans. We have our relationship, first off, you know, when we're born in this world, with our parent, our mother, our father. If we have siblings, we have our relationship with our brother, sister, brothers and sisters, the extended family, the aunts, uncles, cousins, the grandparents. Then we start getting older. We start having relationships with our friends. We start having relationships with our teachers, some of our parents' friends, some of the people that work at our parents' offices. We get older, we start going through puberty, and then we start getting into what is going to be either the most rewarding or the most painful relationship that we can have, which is the romantic relationship experience, the personal one-on-one monogamous relationship experience. And I think we all know that some people aren't going for monogamy. I'm not going to be addressing that here today. Most people are looking for monogamy. Most people are looking for a one-on-one committed relationship. And that's overwhelmingly the majority. What I saw today is that it's actually increasing, contrary to what a lot of people's opinions are, for people to want to be in a committed long-term monogamous relationship. It's well over 80%, when decades prior it was hovering around 60 to 70%. So that's something that actually has gone up. And for people that support and believe in monogamous relationships like that, to me that's great news. And I think that's going to be great news for a lot of people, because I consider that a very positive development. Millennials are not going to be going out there and trying to have a relationship with everybody, believe it or not. Millennials, actually, so far with the data that we have, are the most monogamous generation that has existed. So there's some interesting changes going on. But what we're seeing in relationships is that people are, of course, getting married. And one book I read recently that I've now read all the way through twice is called How to Stay in Love by James J. Sexton. And Mr. James J. Sexton is a divorce attorney in Manhattan, New York City, New York. And that's going to sound a little funny coming from a divorce lawyer, a book about how to stay in love, but he's actually got a lot of insight for it, which we'll go into after we get back from the break. So stay tuned.
That it's normal to lose money in a down market. That's just not true. Hi, I'm Steve Davis, CEO of Total Wealth Academy. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets while creating a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. If you have $100,000 or more to invest, you should consider this to protect and grow your money. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com, and click the free sample class button. Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. We are just about to get started on some of the highlights, really the early highlights, and I'm going to be going through this book front to back over the course of several weeks. But this book is How to Stay in Love by James J. Sexton, a New York, Manhattan family law divorce attorney. And right off the bat, when you start this book, you're going to be getting the explanation as to why in the world would a divorce lawyer be in the business of writing a book about how to stay in love. And it's a very, very fun introduction to this book, and I can definitely recommend this book for anybody that wants to cultivate a healthy relationship and either by improving an existing one or knowing what they want to get into for the next one or their first one. And he emphasizes at the beginning that he believes in marriage. He believes in love. He is someone that has been divorced. But with that experience and the experience of 2+ decades of seeing what happened to these marriages and ending, he's been able to basically reverse engineer the problems and create a roadmap to an actual effective long-term relationship, married or not. You know, if you're going to be with someone for years and years and years, there are going to be challenges. I mean, for me, the perspective in that is to look at it as if I were an island, as if I were by myself, and just say, well, I'm not a perfect person. I don't know anybody who is. So I already know from that information that I'm going to be having problems and challenges come up by myself, with myself. And there are going to be things that are going to come up literally that are 100% my fault, my responsibility, and I need to get those taken care of. So whenever you're getting into a relationship, you're getting into a relationship with another human being who is equally as complex as you are, and they're going to be as imperfect as you are. Okay, maybe a little better than you, maybe a little not better than you, but they're going to be imperfect. They're going to be an imperfect human being. So if you combine two imperfect human beings and try to create a perfect relationship, you're probably going to have a bad experience because your expectations are not realistic. And I've just found that helpful recently to just consider the fact that this is not about achieving perfection. This is not about pretending like the relationships that have lasted for 50 plus years are somehow perfect, because all of the advice that I've seen and read and gotten from people in those relationships will tell you some very hard-hitting stuff about how you need to set your expectations and how you need to act to create a relationship that's actually truly effective. Now, James J. Sexton starts off the book too with some of the sobering facts about long-term relationships. As a divorce attorney in Manhattan, New York, he's a busy guy. He is an extremely busy man, and basically most of his time is spent working or doing jiu-jitsu, which he makes a lot of comparisons to throughout the book. He got into jiu-jitsu and he loves it, and spending time with his kids. But he starts off with a statistic that many of us probably already know, but it needs to be mentioned here, and really, this is what we have to build on. But right around 48% of all marriages in the United States will end in divorce or separation. And it's important to put the separation there, because there are some people in relationships that have been disastrous. They don't live with each other anymore. They can't stand each other's guts, but they don't divorce for whatever reason. It could be moral, it could be religious, it could just be stubbornness, it could just be good old-fashioned procrastination and they just never go. But right at 48%, and people also say it's almost 50%, so really what we've looked at over the past 50 years is right at 48%. So researchers estimate that 41% of all first marriages end in divorce. That's where we kind of have some skewing that we need to account for, because first marriages are actually the most effective marriages. And then the chance of divorce actually increases with each subsequent marriage, unfortunately. 60% of second marriages end in divorce, and 73% of third marriages end in divorce. So it goes from 41% chance on the first, 60% on the second, and 70% on the third. The very interesting takeaway too from this is that it's not men and women going back to marriage in equal numbers. It's actually overwhelmingly men going back to marriage, and most women who are divorced don't end up going back into marriage. On top of that, the United States has the sixth highest divorce rate in the world. Here's a chart of the top 20, which, as funny as that is to say, with the current events going on in the world, that is Russia invading Ukraine, the Russians have the highest divorce rate, significantly so. It says it's 4.8 out of 1,000 marriages per year, and then the United States is at 3.2. So that doesn't sound like a lot, but basically once you factor in all of the marriages over time, that's where you get that 48% of all marriages in the U.S. ending in divorce or separation. So if that all hasn't negged you out, let me go back to James Sexton to say that with everything that he's experienced, he believes in love. He believes in marriage, and he believes that it can be a very effective tool for people to use. And he highlights marriage as a tool early on in the book with the question of what problem exists that marriage is the solution to. We as a society, actually not just us in the United States, but everywhere in the world, it is ubiquitous for people to get married. Every single culture in the world that we know of, and the ones that are quote-unquote uncontacted, appear to practice marriage based on the limited research they have about those very, very uncontacted people. Everybody in the world marries. It's all over the place. There's something about our human experience that makes us want to attach to another person publicly and legally and have our property and finances attached to each other. But his question at the beginning for people to really look at this more objectively is, what is the problem that marriage is solving? And loneliness. Well, no, because there's lots of people in long-term relationships that still feel lonely. Is it intimacy? Well, no, because for a lot of people, the long-term commitment like that is actually something they quote as being the killer of their intimacy. Is it to have the best situation for their children? No, because one of the worst situations people can be in and set their kids up for is a divorcing situation where you have to split custody. So there are a lot of problems that have come from this commitment, but he wants people to identify for themselves specifically and personally, what is it that you're going to get out of this long-term commitment, and specifically with the legal agreement that is marriage? Because marriage isn't just something fun and personal that you just do between two people at all. It's a public declaration with a publicly recognized legal agreement, and you're probably going to make this agreement in front of dozens, if not hundreds of people at a wedding event, and the stipulations are all written down there, depending on which state you're in, as to what's going to happen if you guys end up breaking up. So again, he believes in love. He believes in this institution as long as people are going to look at it without the rose-colored glasses, as it were, and consider the sobering fact when people approach marriage carelessly. They approach it without the consideration for what it really is, and they don't ask the questions that need to be asked of themselves. They don't ask the questions they need to do of the person they're going to be in a relationship with for this extended period of time, because those conversations are extremely difficult. They're some of the hardest conversations that you can have, and sometimes it's going to get you some pushback that you don't want and some stress during the day that you don't want, but you have to be able to approach these things appropriately and make sure that you've got the solutions there that are not going to be exacerbated by the long-term relationship, the marriage, and you don't end up being in a position that's worse rather than better. And what he really boils it down to at the very beginning, and what ends up being the theme for the rest of the book, is identifying what you want and expressing what you want. Right here at the beginning of the book, he says, I have learned over and over that marriages and other committed relationships fail for two fundamental reasons. One, you don't know what you want. And two, you can't express what you want. End of story. And he's a funny guy because every time he makes a huge sweeping declaration like that, he goes and validates it and explains it. And here he's like, no, not end of story. It gets more microscopic. The roots of relationship failure are many. Blah, 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 blah. But once he expands on that point, you have to know what you want. You have to write that down. You have to express what you want to your partner on a regular basis and maintain it so you're moving forward in a positive direction. Stay tuned because we're going to go into the next chapter and expand on what's going on here.
If you have a financial planner, ask them these two questions. One, will I lose money in a down market? Two, do I still pay you if I lose money? If the answer to either question is yes, fire them and come see us. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets and create a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and click the free sample class button. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com. Thank you.
All right, y'all, welcome back. If you have any questions or comments, want to talk about what's been discussed so far, all you got to do is call us at KSEV 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. And if you want to send me an email, you can send that to Trevor@TotalWealthAcademy.com. And if you want to get the link to today's book, send that to me. It's called How to Stay in Love by James J. Sexton. I will be happy to send you the Amazon link to purchase that on either Kindle or hard copy. This one I had in hard copy. I picked this up at Books A Million, and it's definitely a very fun read. It's not the longest book by any means. He's very, very fun to read. It's a very, very entertaining but also educational book, and I cannot recommend this book highly enough. So we were just at our statistics for what's going on, and we just talked about you have to know what you want and you have to express what you want. And like many things out there, and my radio show being no different, I mean, it's a whole lot easier to say stuff, Trevor, than actually do it. And this is something that's extremely challenging for me personally because I'm somebody that's a serious people pleaser. And that doesn't mean I always end up making everybody around me happy all the time, but I literally have a reaction anytime I'm even about to do something that I think is going to bother somebody or hurt their feelings or whatever. And it's almost illogical because I don't necessarily know what they're going to do or say. And the vast majority of the time that I'm worried about it, the reaction is nowhere near what I expected. And definitely nowhere near as bad. A big issue that people have is not expressing what they want, which is explained in chapter 3 of this book. So I want to start off with a story that if you asked your spouse or significant other to pick something up today, let's say you came home, you forgot something, and you know they're coming home and they're going to go someplace where they could get it, and you text them, hey, can you pick up this item for me? Then your spouse or significant other gets home, you're looking for the item, and it's nowhere to be found, and at the same time, they don't say anything about it. So not only did they forget completely to pick it up in the first place, but they didn't even remember they forgot when they saw you and after they got home. You know, how are most people going to feel in this situation? Probably pretty crappy, probably pretty annoyed. But what are a lot of people going to do when the situation occurs? Are they going to talk about it immediately, or are they going to stew over it for an extended period of time? They're going to think about the situation. Think about how their partner never listens. Think about how their partner has done this 100 times, how their partner just doesn't care about them, and they just stew and brood and overthink this one single mistaken situation, and they end up using that stress and bringing it out into the relationship in a negative way. It could be a spiteful comment later. It could be just general agitation. It could be any number of things, but it ends up causing significant strife for the relationship because the issue wasn't confronted immediately. So what Mr. Sexton suggests is to hit send now. The title of chapter 3 is Hit Send Now. What he wants people to do, based on his experience, is to avoid the mistake of brooding over even the smallest situation. When something happens that genuinely bothers you, you should have the rapport and the maturity to approach it in a decent, kind, loving way that nonetheless reflects the seriousness of your feelings. This doesn't mean to ream on them. This doesn't mean to be rude with them. This doesn't mean to beat around the bush either. And this doesn't mean to take every single little thing and confront your partner about it, because there's going to be a ton of little tiny things here and there, most likely, that you could bring up. I mean, really, you could bring up anything. I mean, if you were really that type of person, you could literally find conflict with anything. But if something genuinely bothered you, confront and deal with it in a healthy, considerate, loving way that's nonetheless serious. Now, what we have, especially for people like myself, is we have that people-pleasing streak that he talks about in this part of the book. You have to, quote-unquote, go against all of your instincts as a human being who, like most human beings, has a people-pleasing streak. Just press send there and now. And this could be in a text, this could be in an email, and maybe that's a better way to do it because that allows you to step back and take the time to actually write out your thoughts. His suggestion too here is that maybe it's not the best thing to immediately confront somebody about a scenario like that, because sometimes you do have to take 10, count to 10, count to 20, and take a break from the situation so you're not going to react in a way that causes more conflict instead of just dealing with whatever issue there was specifically. In this case, your significant other forgot to bring home something for you and they didn't even know. Then, what he talks about is an extreme example of where someone has taken not hitting send now and brought themselves to a point where their relationship is literally ending. This is a story that he actually talks about at the very beginning of the chapter, and the names are always changed, of course, but he relays a story between a woman in his office that was divorcing a man named Mac. Her name is Cynthia. She's divorcing Mac. They have one child who's 6 years old, and they just had a child who's one. Now, they had a lot of problems with each other because Mac was drinking heavily, he was staying out all night, he was being verbally abusive, and bear in mind that this is going to be a one-sided story because he's representing her, and it's in his best interest to represent her in the best possible way. So if there was something going on the other side, you know, we don't know, but this is what we have so far. This is what we have from this book and the information that he got. What they decided to do when dealing with the problem of heavy drinking and verbal abuse was to ignore it. What Cynthia decided to do was to basically pretend like those problems did not exist. She made some small comments here and there, but she never actually confronted Mac in a loving, direct, and serious way that addressed the issues that she was having with him in their relationship. And then they got to a point 5 years after their first child was born, and she got the impression that with the relationship really seeming like it was about to end, that she should pull a Hail Mary pass and they should have another child. And that is going to fix their relationship. Well, of course, in this situation, that did not work out. And now in this situation, Cynthia had two kids that she had to bring into this divorce and not just one. And one of those kids literally being a one-year-old infant. Long story short, this divorce ended. They split custody of these children pretty much as well as they could. But what he learned as the lawyer watching the situation was that her approach to problem solving wasn't even an approach at all. I mean, it was basically burying her head in the sand as much as she possibly could until it literally got to a point where all of the stuff she should have otherwise been doing this entire time wasn't going to work because it was nowhere near enough. And she felt that she had to have another child with this man as the final chance for their relationship to work. And this is a very extreme example, but unfortunately it apparently happens pretty often, as he indicates throughout this chapter. And it's not even as extreme necessarily as having a child, but many, many people are not facing the problems in their relationship because they're not following that second rule, which is expressing what they want. And I'm going to assume that they know exactly what they want, and they're just not expressing it in the situation, and probably a combination of both. But I want the lesson here to be from the expression side of things. When there's something bothering you, you have to be able to approach it in a constructive manner and not in a manner that's going to create more issues. And definitely build on something that allows you to handle the problems as they arrive rather than something that gets expanded on and inflated unnecessarily to create more problems later. So hit send now is James Sexton's advice from chapter 3. If something is bothering you, don't sucker yourself into being just the people-pleasing person. If you've got something that needs to be addressed, and that doesn't even have to be something with your relationship necessarily, it could be something with you as well, but you have to be able to commit to that communication in a solid format. Preferably the text, the email, if that makes it easier for you, you can write it out, you can think about it and really make things solid. If you're a person-to-person communicator, you have to be able to face those problems. The relationships that do succeed, as he emphasizes, aren't the ones that are burying their heads in the sand on a daily basis. They're the ones that are facing the challenges head-on as a team together and fixing them as they come up rather than stewing them for years and years and years. Once we get back, we will be going into Chapter 4, The Scoreboard of the Relationship.
Hi, this is Steve Davis of the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Most people think they need hundreds of thousands of dollars to successfully invest in real estate. That's simply not true. If you have $100,000 or more, you can begin passive investing today. No worrying with contractors or tenants, and you get all the benefits of real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com, and click the free sample class button. Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody, to the final segment of today's show. If y'all have any questions for me, give us a call, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. If you want to send me an email, that's trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. If you want the free PDF of The Richest Man of Babylon, send me an email. If you want the Amazon link to today's book, How to Stay in Love by James J. Sexton, send me an email, trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. We just finished up the analysis of Chapter 3, hit send now. Now, the next chapter, and I'm not necessarily going to be going through this book over the next couple of weeks, and I'm not just going to make the next couple of weeks just about this book, but the beginning of this book has so much important stuff for people to really take action on early on that I feel like this is where I wanted to get started. As the book goes on, it really gets more and more detailed. The solutions start to build up on the ones previously. So it very much functions like the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, for example, where you start off with the foundation and then you build up to the branches and the leaves of this tree that you're building, which is the skills and techniques necessary to maintain a happy, loving relationship. Even when the challenges come, even when things change and it's not the way that you necessarily wanted them to go, you're still going to have what it takes to allow this relationship to continue to be good. There's always going to be challenges in any relationship, no matter what, guaranteed 100%. The relationship scoreboard that I just mentioned is a fun one because in his experience, Mr. Sexton has seen that a lot of people are consciously or subconsciously analyzing their partner and judging their partner on a daily basis. They're looking at what they do with their dishes. They're looking at what they do with their clothes. Are they throwing them on the floor? Are they putting them in the hamper? Are they doing their laundry? Are they keeping stuff organized in the kitchen? Are they watching a bunch of television? Are they playing too many video games? Are they talking to the kids? Are they picking up the kids from school? Are they helping the kids with the homework? All sorts of different things. And everybody's got different priorities as to what they consider to be the most important. But he noticed a pattern, and the pattern that he saw very commonly was a scoreboard being set by these couples that were breaking up. It wasn't necessarily something written out, but in his communications with them, he found out that there were certain things that they kept highlighting over and over and over again as these big, huge, negative flaws of their partner, as if there wasn't a single thing ever that made their partner someone positive that they wanted to be around. It's like, you have to take responsibility at a certain point, no matter how much you've changed and how much you've grown from the failed relationships that you have, because like most of us, I've had failed relationships, and it's one of the most difficult experiences you'll go through, but you have to take responsibility for the fact that at a certain point, you genuinely like this person. It could have been for the completely wrong reasons, but there were things that you liked about them. There were things that you loved about them, and those are the positive things that should be on this scoreboard. Because the scoreboard that people are keeping actually doesn't really keep track of the positive things. It's actually really a collection of all of the negative things that your partner has ever done, and basically, let's say there's a point system that if it hits 1,000, then you're going to break up. And people are just basically stacking it with the points, with nothing ever dragging it down, aka reducing it, I should say, that's a better word in this situation, that brings it more back to zero, or in the negative numbers, it takes it away from that 1,000, that's the number you need to decide to break up with someone. That's a huge issue. And not only that, but when people are doing these scoreboards, he says that people are basically counting every single negative thing that their partner does as 25 points. And when they are actually keeping track of the positive things, they're counting the positive things as 1 point. So 25 to 1. Your partner leaves their socks out on the floor when they come home. They always forget to put it up after they come home from work. You always have to pick up their socks off the floor. 25 points bad. Your partner is loving, monogamous, and reliable. 3 points total. Like, okay, there's some serious problems here with the way that this math is working in terms of these relationships. That's very, very hard to account for whenever you're unhappy overall, because there's the confirmation bias that sets in and makes our brain see only the things that we've already reached a conclusion on. If we decide at a certain point that we're not happy in our relationship, you know, in theory, you could just be like, okay, well, just break up. But that's not what people do. People are going to continue on and keep stacking up these things until they get to a severe breaking point in most situations. And not to mention the fact that sometimes, it just like being an imperfect person, your imperfect relationship, you're going to go through some phases where maybe you're not as happy as you'd want to be. That does not mean instantly quit this relationship. That's ridiculous. That's not realistic. That's completely detached from the way reality works. But you have to be somebody that's able to fairly account for the character of your partner. And I would say that it's probably a little bit easier to do than yourself, because you're the one viewing it from the outside. So that should give you an advantage in terms of giving a fair, objective analysis of your partner's pros and cons. You're not perfect. Again, your partner's not going to be perfect. So there are going to be some cons, but you should have a ton of pros to work with. And if you actually account for the positive things overall, you should be in the green once you do the math. And you should be fairly accounting for those positive things with the fair and equal point system, and not making it to where the good stuff is 1 point and the bad stuff is 25 points. That is not going to cut it, and that is going to be a recipe for disaster in this relationship and for the next one you decide to pursue. The next thing he highlights in this chapter is about narcissism and the issue we have in the scoreboard of why we have the need to be right in this situation. If we have a scoreboard for the relationship, what exactly are we keeping score with when it comes to being right and wrong? Another scoreboard. Our egos want us to be right as much as possible, and being in a relationship with someone we love doesn't turn off that disgusting habit. Of course we want to be right, because we want to be attached to the things that are actually correct in reality itself. We want to attach our ego to those things so we can show that we are the correct ones, we are the one that's on the right path, we're moving in the right direction, we know better than other people, and therefore we're better. But you have to be able to take a step back sometimes and identify what is the actual need of the communication that you're having with your partner at this point in time. Do you have to be right in this situation? If your spouse came home and forgot that item I mentioned earlier, are you going to be right to get upset at them? Okay, technically yes, because they screwed up, they made a boo-boo, and they hurt your feelings because of it. Okay, you are right for doing this. But is that really about being right? If doing this action is going to make you miserable, is it really worth being right in that scenario? Chapter 4's title is You Can Be Right or You Can Be Happy. Look, everybody wants to be right. Everybody wants to prove it, and everybody wants to show it. But there comes a certain point where you have to let things go that are not worth fighting over. When somebody is choosing to be right instead of happy, they're going to use that happiness as the collateral damage of their being right, as he concludes this chapter with. So guys, make sure you're being nice to your partners, respect them, love them, stick with your relationships, work out the problems, and don't select being right instead of being happy. Sometimes it's a simple choice. Go for the thing that makes you both happy instead of being right. See y'all next week.
You've been listening to the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Please remember that this show is for entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investing advice. Always get a professional opinion before making any investment decisions. To find out more about coaching and consulting at Total Wealth Academy, visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and attend one of our free sample classes on real estate investing. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.